ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Good to speak with you once again. I hope you had a good weekend, enjoying watching the madness of this world as the elite and officialdom of this planet is pushing us closer to the precipice, rejecting common sense and natural order, all for the sake of the Church of Liberalism and Political Correctness, our new orthodox religion. Just look at how James Watson was treated for having a different take on the data that he's seen. You know, personal opinions are no longer accepted in the hive. It's a recipe for disaster, folks, and that is the game. That is how they're seeking to terminate completely what we are. And the rebellion, the true rebellion, is just beginning. Good stuff. Well, I'm your host, Henrik Palmgren, and this is Red Eyes Radio. You can hear us three times a week, and every other week you can also hear Radio 314 as well. Sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a bit less. We cover a wide spectrum of important topics in order to understand what is happening and why. From our hidden and suppressed history to current events and projections into the future, we focus on topics that questions the directions we are going and what subversive ideologies, groups, and individuals are behind the desire to control and manage us and what techniques they use. RedIceCreations.com is the website. We also have RedIceMembers.com and RedIceRadio.net. Well, we haven't really talked that much about Ferguson yet, but we have Mike King back with us on the program today to talk about how this situation is being used to further the agenda of the elites. Mike King is a private investigative journalist and researcher based in the New York City area. A 1987 graduate of Rutgers University, King's subsequent 27-year career in marketing and advertising has equipped him with a unique perspective when it comes to understanding how public opinion is indeed scientifically manufactured. Madison Avenue marketing acumen combines with what he calls city boy instincts, makes Mike King one of the most tenacious detectors of things that don't add up in the world today. In the second hour, we are going to discuss his take on the Hitler in Argentina hoax, as he calls it. But we'll begin with Michael Brown, Darren Wilson, and the Ferguson circus exacerbated by the media. Hey, Mike, good to have you back again. Thank you for coming on. It's always a pleasure. Hope you're doing well today.
Hello, Henrik. It's a pleasure to be with you. How is the weather there in Scandinavia?
Well, it's cold, as usual, of course, and dark, as it always is around this time of year. How's it over there on the East Coast?
Very, very Swedish today.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're snow and rain and ice, dark.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I hear that. That's the what we're suffering on from the winter time here. But we have a lot of things lined up today, obviously, that we want to get into. And I obviously want to, let's just kind of hit the item that is hot off the presses, at least when it comes to America and what is happening there. Ferguson, I mean, we have to talk about this. I do want to get to the big picture a little bit later and see, kind of as we zoom out a bit, see what this means and see how the media is using it, what they're trying to achieve with all of this. I definitely want to get your take on that. But let's just start with your take on the verdict and the evidence that was presented and the witnesses and all that to kind of help clear Officer Darren Wilson and, of course, all the nonsense that we've seen consequently to that. But what was your initial take on this, Mike?
Well, my take on this recent verdict and the whole trial is that a horrible misjustice was carried out, but not for the reasons that the media would have us believe. The injustice was the fact that this police officer had to even go through this ordeal at all. This case doesn't even meet the threshold to go to an investigation or a grand jury. And the fact that you know, he's been acquitted now and some of the data is coming out, it's actually more troubling to me. Because other than the forensic evidence, I already knew this back in August. About these testimonies and the evidence and the details of the real story, but it was concealed from the general public. So had this come out months ago, the momentum for this national mini uprising would never have built up to this point. So it should never have got to this point. I mean, you cannot possibly find a more open shut case of total innocence.
Right. It's been very interesting to watch the developments and see what you know, consequently happened, because it seems to me, as these things always are, kind of the way the O.J. Simpson trial occurred as well. And it was actually very interesting to compare that case to this one, and reactions and everything that has happened, you know, and these are 20 years apart and they're very telling. But I think it was Patrick Henningsen over at 21st Wire that basically said, regarding this whole thing that happened, they said, for this mob assembling in Ferguson, it seems though anything short of a grand jury demanding the electric chair for Darren Wilson will result in the burning of the city, along with plenty of violence, random reprisal attacks, etc. And of course, it didn't take long for this to bloom out. And obviously, we do have you know, the police right there in place, and everything is just kind of, you know, ramping up. It was like there had been testing to do this. That's my take on it. They wanted to use the situation as a means to not only legitimize militarization of the police, but obviously using the whole event overall to push it in this direction. What do you make of it?
Well, yes. I mean, this was clearly orchestrated months in advance. And, you know, the majority of these protesters, certainly the more violent ones, they came from out of state. And stories about this have appeared even in the mainstream media. So we have outside activists, many of them known communists, were going into Ferguson, staying in hotels, and preparing for this full time, which makes one wonder, where is the financing for this coming from? So this was clearly orchestrated, and the main conductor in this orchestra was one Al Sharpton, who we're all familiar with. He already has a national network in place. And he also has contacts with the Black Panther groups and the communist groups. And, you know, many of the people, so-called conservatives in this country, who have been frustrated with these events, you know, they keep pointing at Sharpton. It's Al Sharpton. It's the Black Panthers.
Yeah.
Standing above and behind him is that degenerate in the White House, what I call Obongo. It is a fact that Mr. Sharpton goes in and out of this White House with the same facility that I might go in and out of my parents' house when I go to visit him. Right. They are joined at the hip. And it is Obama who is ultimately orchestrating this and playing this sick game of good cop, bad cop, in which Obama goes on television. He urges for peace and calm and law and order. Meanwhile, his co-conspirators burn the house down. So that's the game that's being played. And then, of course, there's another level above Obama. And we all know about those aliens who run this country. And those are the ultimate culprits behind this circus.
What do you think they are seeking to gain from playing it in this way, as they have?
Well, I believe, as you said, that they're hoping to expand this, trigger this into color revolution style. I mean, this is exactly how they did Syria. It starts out with demonstrations, and then you add in your violent provocateurs, and then it expands, and then you know, they brought in the foreign radicals, of course. But I think what they're hoping to do is provide the spark using these communist thugs and the Black Panthers and these stupid white college kids, dupes, and eventually expand it to some kind of nationwide chaos. I don't think they will be successful, however, because, you know, in a way, the very same apathy that is the problem in this country can also work against them. It just seems there's not enough desire out there among liberals and progressives, so-called, to go out and riot. So I don't know if they'll be able to trigger what it is that they want to trigger, but I believe that was their intent. Some kind of national uprising to serve as a pretext for cracking down with the Department of Homeland Security, which is also under the control of one of Obama's communist Negroes. So that's the game. I don't know if they will succeed.
Interesting. I think they definitely picked the wrong time of year to do this then, if that's the plan, because I'm just thinking back on, for example, the other, when we have colder climates like we do in Sweden, the immigrant-driven riots that occurred you know, last year and the year before that were definitely just taking place during the summertime, you know, and they couldn't be out in the snow, obviously, during wintertime and bother with doing these kinds of stuff then. So that's got to be a wrong timing for them. But nonetheless, having said that, I have been trying to follow the story and keeping up with the developments of it. And it seems like it's definitely spread to some other, you know, towns and cities, though, and certain things are, you know, definitely blooming out in that capacity. What do you think is next from here? Where are they going to go with this?
Well, I mean, I don't know how it's going to go. They can always activate some of the more violent agent provocateurs and ratchet this thing up, or it might fizzle out. It might not materialize to what they hoped for. So you know, it's hard to say. I know that they tried a similar play a few years ago after the Trayvon Martin verdict, and that didn't catch on either. So things are a little different now than they were in the 60s. I think it's harder to bring about nationwide riots. So right. I'm optimistic that this thing will die out in a few days. But, you know, Henrik, even if it does, something damaging, very damaging, just happened in America that has completely been ignored as a result of the timing of this verdict.
Mm-hmm.
That was the broad-based amnesty, which Obama has given to millions of illegal invaders, which I believe is the final nail in the coffin of America. Before the outrage could even build due to that action, we've already had our attention shifted to this business in Ferguson. So I don't believe for one moment that it is a coincidence that the two events happened on back-to-back days.
I see, because, yeah, it was interesting. I was watching the NBC feed, and I forget who it was that decided to put the announcement of all of this, or letting the grand jury, you know, decide around this time of not only the year, but this date here. And I think you're right there, because allegedly some of the journalists had tried to pose questions towards whoever, I forget now, but whoever made that decision, and they couldn't get a straight answer on, you know, why now? Why even so close to Thanksgiving? Wasn't this like the wrong way of doing things, etc.? But they didn't mind. So I think you're onto something there. They definitely want to try to cover something up. So that's interesting. That means that they're obviously trying to hoodwink the American people and telling them, you know, classic, look over here, right? And then when the real story is happening somewhere else and no one is hardly paying attention to it because it's just such a media flare around the Ferguson story. So yeah, let's just switch over to that for a moment before we talk a little bit more about Ferguson later. But what give us the analysis of what they're seeking to achieve with the amnesty for all the illegals and everything, and how you think that that's going to, you know, play out? Because we do have the issue, of course, of the more comes into the country, the more they have the capability of bringing in, you know, more of their relatives to the country, etc. This is what has happened, and this is how it's continued to unfold. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, absolutely. This becomes viral, this problem. They say 5 million, but I suspect it's even more than that. But 5 million now, they are clear, and they are here legally now. And they can begin the process of actual citizenship. And from that begins the chain migration. They could bring abuelo and abuela, grandma and grandpa, home back here from the home country and qualify for Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. There's even word now that our incentive programs have been put in place that will give a $3,000 tax credit for hiring some of these new aliens, so we can embed them into the workforce at the expense of the 20 or so percent who are already unemployed. So, I mean, this is going to have far-reaching ramifications and implications. It's going to be more than 5 million. I don't know, 10, 15, 20 million. And more, most significantly, they're all going to be left-wing Democrat bloc voters.
Yeah.
So those regions of the country which still vote for Republican congressmen. Not that the Republican Party is anything to place great hope in, of course.
Sure.
But nonetheless, at least they're not Marxists.
Well, they're neocons, right? That's the problem.
Neocons. It's a different set of problems.
Yeah, for sure.
But this could, in the long term, lead to truly a one-party country along the lines of what has happened to the insane state of California, which was one of the most, had been one of the most conservative and business friendly climates in the world up until 20 years ago. Today it's, you know, Sweden West.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, 30, 40 years ago, maybe, well, let's say 50, 60 years ago, you know, all the strawberries just rotted, you know, in the fields in America because no white people wanted to pick them. And now finally, of course, you have this salvation coming in and taking care of all these jobs. This is some of the reasoning behind the logic for why this is, you know, should be accepted, of course. But again, I see it nothing less as the same scenario I see in Europe, which is, population replacement and you know, really increasing the migration to create as much problems as possible. I think it's part of that plan to kind of economically completely undermine and destroy America. What's your take on it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no question, you know, about it. We've already seen it in microcosm in a state like California, which in just a short time converted from the most business-friendly, conservative Republican state in America to just a left-wing hellhole. I mean, it's insane what they're doing now in California. They've already created unisex bathrooms for elementary school students. So if a young boy feels he's a girl, he can go, you know, he is mandated by law to be permitted into the girls' laboratory. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's happening in this once conservative state. And it's coming to Texas, which, you know, someone might scoff at that because when we think of Texas, we think of, you know, cowboys and, you know, rugged individualism and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But if you look at the demographics of Texas with all this immigration, and we're only about 10 years away from Texas being converted into the new California. So this madness is going to sweep the whole country. And, you know, of course, it's by design.
Well, then you have on top of that things to kind of stoke the fire. I think Obama, it was a recent story from earlier this year, actually giving $30 million to La Raza affiliates and things like that, and Meche is being financed and things like that. So it's like, it really seems to me that they're definitely in support of this kind of Reconquista movement and of like what they see as claiming and taking back the southwestern states, right?
Yeah. That's what La Raza has always stood for. I mean, I remember 30 years ago at college, and they had chapters of La Raza at my university. And back in those days, I mean, even the liberals on campus thought that these people as crazy, you know? The feeling on the left back then was, well, don't confuse us with people like La Raza or the LGBT. You know, those are crazy people. And today, that is the new left. So the people that we laughed at when I was at college and no one took seriously are now in the White House. Literally, La Raza, the head of La Raza, has an office in the White House. And La Raza, as you know, is Spanish for the race.
Yeah.
So, you know, the madness is the new norm.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I don't know how people don't see it or what the intentions and the goals are. They're so hypnotized and mesmerized by, you know, the political correctness and these terms and, you know, diversity and all these things. And, you know, they're sitting in many regards then in their white neighborhoods and, you know, wishing for something that they truly haven't really experienced. And as we know, studies has been done on terms of how many problems in terms of unrest and things that actually comes with multiculturalism. Is a completely different picture that emerges when you look at the studies for how things really are, as opposed to how they're saying it's going to be. So I guess nothing is going to happen on a larger scale until people wake up and actually have experiences of this themselves, right? Or, I mean, otherwise, what's the situation? How do you get out of that, right?
Well, you know, your typical white suburban liberal now, you know, he's able to pretend that this madness doesn't affect him, but that's going to change. Already, we are seeing now efforts to map out not only every town in America, but every community. And the intention of the Department of Housing and Urban Development is to determine the degree of diversity in each neighborhood. This was announced by Obama's people a couple years ago. And, you know, logic will tell you there's a reason for this. Once that they identify that there are certain neighborhoods that are not diverse enough, they will introduce the diversity into the white suburbs. And there's many ways they can do this with all the foreclosed properties that are out there and things like that. They can convert some of these homes in the suburbs to 2 and 3 family homes and then bring in the Section 8 people. Section 8 is a program in America which essentially pays your rent for you. So ultimately, this is going to affect every street in America. And at some point, I mean, you hope these, you know, these foolish, decadent, degenerate white suburbanites will wake up and smell the culture shock.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think they call it, what was it? Geospatial discrimination. I think they call it, right?
Yeah. They've got some very good script writers with this stuff.
Oh, they sure do. Exactly. Horizontally challenged, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, they have, of course, they're pushing the anchor babies things. I mean, we covered a lot of this in the St. George and the White Whore video we did recently. And a lot of people are still kind of fighting that and don't really, you know, all the coins haven't dropped there in terms of, you know, what the ruling New World Order is seeking to do and how they're seeking to do that and how they're using, frankly, a lot of these people. Maybe they're glad to go along with it. Maybe they don't understand what's happening or that they're being used or what have you. Nonetheless, for them, maybe it's a good thing. You know, they see it as an upgrade or something different or whatever. They can, you know, leave Mexico or whatever. But, you know, the issue at hand here, of course, is that this is going to create a lot of problems. And that's what we're kind of keeping hammering away at. And just to go back to Ferguson a little bit again, I think that's kind of a flavor of that, because the way that the media have been using this and actually creating, I think, intentionally a lot of, you know, tension around this as well. Just look at, for example, how we posted a story about this, how the New York Times, they posted a photo of Officer Darren Wilson's house and the street address. Basically, you know, go here, folks, and screw him up for us. Thank you so much. You know, making it nice and dandy for them. This is, you'd think that there would be something that kind of at least protected the police officer, that he acted on behalf of the police, not as himself as an individual, at least not until a trial against him had been placed or something, so we can discover that he's actually acted out of bounds, kind of thing, right?
Yeah, well, they're not interested in justice. I really think, I mean, if they could, they would kill him. That was a dastardly thing to do. It was the same thing they did a few years ago to the parents of George Zimmerman. It wasn't the Times, but it was a big Hollywood producer. Tweeted out their address or something.
Really? Yeah.
So, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that happens in third world, you know, banana republics. And it's coming. I mean, ultimately, you know, these cases, the day is coming when the Darren Wilsons will not even have a day in court or they will be railroaded.
Do you think it would have been better to have a trial, you know, instead of having a grand jury making this decision?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, that's impossible anyway. You have to, although they did bypass the grand jury step when they tried to lynch George Zimmerman. They mm-hmm. went straight to trial, which is really unprecedented. But you have to have a grand jury to, you know, this way the system works here is, the job of the grand jury is not to convict, but just to say, you know, there's probable cause here for a trial. There should be a regular trial. But as I said earlier, it should never even have come to the point of a grand jury. That in and of itself was an injustice to put this poor cop through this kind of stress. And the only reason that happened is because Obama and Holder interceded in this matter.
Yeah,
you know, thankfully they did, and it didn't go to, you know, a regular jury trial because, you know, with a jury trial, you could end up with a, well, I doubt you would have ended up with an all-black jury.
Like you did for O.J. Simpson, right? I think it was of How many was it again? Let me just find that quickly.
The O.J. Simpson jury was all black.
It was nine, I believe, and one Hispanic and then two white.
Oh, there were two whites. Okay.
Yeah. But it was, what was it, after a year of, going through everything, whatever, and then they only deliberated for about 4 hours?
A very long, tedious process.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is this grand jury took 3 months, which again is unprecedented because they're not there to try the case. The only purpose of a grand jury is to, have a look at the preliminary data and say, yes, there should be a trial, or no, there's nothing at all here, no trial. So typically, grand juries, when they convene, it should be a matter of days, not weeks, and certainly not months, which leads me to believe that there was a higher hand that was kind of dragging this thing out for purposes of this kind of timing. And how convenient. It finally happened right after the election and right after the immigration amnesty. But it is unheard of in the American justice system for a grand jury to go on for this long.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder about Darren Wilson as well. I mean, he's got to basically, get like a face transplant or something and then just move, to Alaska or something to, be able to survive this, I guess, right?
Well, I think eventually the Fuhrer will die down. My concern is, what's this guy going to do for a living? He's already been relieved of duty. I mean, I'm sure they gave him a nice parting gift. Hopefully he'll write a book and get rich.
Right.
I saw his full interview with George Stephanopoulos online, and he seems, you can just tell that the man is very genuine, a very impressive young man. And, I feel for him having to go through all of this.
Yeah.
It's very cruel.
Did he act, in your view, when you looked at what it's been, presented and what they talked about and the witnesses and, people have been looking at different things here. But, I mean, he acted the only way he could have acted, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, this gentle giant was charging at him, a full bull rush, 6'5", 300 pounds. He's bearing down on him. I mean, what choice did he have? And when you hear this absurd mantra from the Marxist media of unarmed teen, how many times have you heard that?
Every time, yeah.
Unarmed teen. Well, excuse me, a fist attached to the frame of a 6'5", 300-pound person, that's more of an arm than a knife or a gun. I would rather face somebody with a knife who's my size. Okay.
Right.
I've got a shot of taking the knife, even a gun, away from him. I'd rather face that situation than go toe to toe with someone 6'5", 300 pounds, drugged up and violent. So, forget about this garbage about unarmed. His body was his arm.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then you have the previous incidents, of course, and the cigar shop there and everything. And they knew they were looking for someone and, everything is, have of course, but just unfurled after that point. But it's just this way that it really shows at the end of everything. It's just basically down to the skin color, and that's the only association that there is. And what's strange about that, I think, at least if we examine and compare, from the left and from the right of what they think about this, for someone who discredits, let's say, culture and heredity or biological differences, as they do on the left, right, the cultural Marxists, for them to then have this kind of obsession with skin color is that's incredible. I mean, I would understand if the other side would do it, because at least they recognize that, yes, there are differences here. There's more to it than skin color, etc. There's recognitions of things there. But nonetheless, it becomes so simplified, and it becomes about this one issue. And of course, everyone is there right away and taking their sides. Is there any way out of that kind of situation, do you think? I mean, obviously, again, the media and the power mongers in the political system, I think that they loved when this happened, because as you say, it keeps them out of bounds. It keeps people occupied on these kinds of issues, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, this, of course it serves the interests of the predatory ruling class. And they are the ones who've installed this religion. And that's the problem, Henrik. This is a religion. When you strip away people's faith in a true God, something will fill the vacuum. It almost seems as if we have a genetic predisposition to believe in something. And, you know, you take away all the traditional beliefs regarding, you know, God and country and race and so forth. What fills a void is this political correctness. And it's just astonishing how blinded these people are. I mean, some of them we know are degenerate communists. They know the truth, but they don't care. They're just looking for trouble. But I'm talking about what I refer to as libtards, part liberal, part retarded, who just react and do not even take the time to assess the data and right away go into this mode. And indeed, if you look at these mass demonstrations across America, I would venture to say the majority of the participants, certainly in places like Minneapolis, Seattle, and even New York City, these were white, young white punks, college kids, hipsters, etc. Not blacks, not communists, just deluded white liberals who worship this garbage. And that's what's really tragic and what's really scary, even more than the communists.
Well, it's because they've been hit the hardest with this propaganda. That's quite clear. They've been, you know, inducted in this religion of guilt and victimhood and, you know, all these kinds of issues. That and it's really an image which is, in my view, not really built on reality or anything that's founded in nature. This is something that comes with, you know, the kind of corporate materialistic world that we live in today. It's just, you know, it's just about displacement of economies and all just, you know, social issues and whatnot. It's not like based on anything that's real to the human experience anymore. They just have this idea that they've been indoctrinated with of how things, you know, could be or should be, basically. And then they're trying to act everything according to that. And that's why I think we have such an incredible split as well, because it's like, you know, the different sides here is like they don't even live, almost literally, they don't live in the same world anymore. See what I'm saying?
Oh, no. It's, I mean, the difference has become irreconcilable once, you know, once the inner psychology has been tampered to that extent. You know, what do you do with these people? You know, short of taking them to an isolated island and debriefing them for 30 days, just breaking them down, maybe hitting them over the head with a 2x4. I don't know how you could go about deprogramming some of these people. And there were even a few cases where some of the white liberals in these groups were attacked by some of the Negroes in the groups. And you would think that might wake them up a little bit. But then they make the comment that, you know, they don't hold any animosity towards their attacker because they understand their rage. So even knocking some sense into their heads physically doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's been so many of these kinds of cases as well. It's, you know, they never put the shoe on the other foot, as I say. And this is the thing that really bugs me about these kinds of situations, that there's such an incredible double standards and just this one way street towards, you know, looking down on the Europeans in the situation, the whites, you know, and it just, yeah. it's so, well, that is unfair, if anything, right? That's not egalitarian, if nothing else. It's like it's a completely different standard for some reason that these people are held towards. And the fact that, you know, they're trying, you know, so hard to basically demonize and you know, instill this guilt in a lot of these people. And as you say, a lot of them don't realize what has happened to them, or they don't, you know, they can't wake up from that. But let's switch a little bit to the police in Ferguson, what you have to say about that. And if in terms of how they've, you know, acted in this, because, you know, again, I think it's quite obvious that they've definitely taken this as an opportunity to, you know, justify, because they've frankly seen some of the most stupid, outrageous behavior here in terms of how the liquor stores have been looted and, you know, things have been burned down. And I mean, what are the police to do in a situation like this? Are they just to allow all of this to go on? What can they do, right?
Well, it's interesting. The first night of the riots in Ferguson, it does appear that some type of stand down order was issued from on high. It's very strange because the governor had already declared a state of emergency 3-4 days later. And the cops were there. National Guard is there. it was known long in advance that the town was filled with troublemakers. And yet they were unable to stop. What was it, like 40 stores were burned? And the deputy governor of Missouri just came out and said that he believes a stand-down order was issued from the White House.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so clearly, you know, this was allowed to happen. I mean, they had so much advance notice of what was going on. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, that's essentially what the police have done. And, you know, they need to take a harder line. I mean, what happened in New York City yesterday was, you know, a travesty. I mean, there wasn't violence or rioting or killing, but a major city was shut down. They just shut down a bridge. They shut down 8th Avenue. They got in front of the Lincoln Tunnel, and it was a nightmare for commuters. And, you know, I mean, you have to take the gloves off with these people, or what you end up doing is emboldening them even more.
Yeah, and so what's, you know, tricky here, of course, is that it seems like one of the situations that if you don't allow anything to happen that they want to see fit, whatever that might be, if it's, you know, looting or rioting or what have you, it's like you're the racist, right? And it's like, and that's intended to, of course, you know, shut down any kind of activity of trying to preserve, you know, the peace in this area, you know. So it's like whatever you do, it's going to be used against you. But I mean, you're right, though. I think it was the one of the directors of the teaparty.net, Innes, whatever his name, he spoke about this in terms of that there was agitators that were, you know, brought in basically to Ferguson to egg on the situation and everything else. And I think we've seen this in a lot of the riots, just as you said before, that has taken place and occurred, and they know exactly how to use that. I mean, that's a really tricky thing if it's from state level, obviously, then you know, they want it to happen, right? But even if it wasn't, let's say, that's a pretty difficult situation to deal with and actually try to shut that down in some capacity, because, you know, as we've seen in some of these other, you know, revolutions around the in different parts of the world, they've been, I mean, largely successful in terms of what they wanted to do, and in return, basically just managed to demonize the government, as happened in Egypt, for example. So whatever the government tried to do in terms of shutting it down, they are the guilty party, and in comes the American military and trying to displace the government because they have stepped on the toes of their citizens, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was a certain level of professionalism in regards to the fires that were the fires that were started a few nights ago. This is coming from the police, the fire department in Ferguson. Just the way that they used accelerants around the perimeters of the building, the way they targeted the buildings. It appeared that these people knew what they were doing, as opposed to just some thug wantonly throwing a Molotov cocktail. This was more than that. So you may have had, I suspect there were government operatives involved. Yes, there is a degree of professionalism with these things. And you, same thing you saw in the Ukraine, in Georgia years ago, you know, the Arab Spring and so on, is the same template. I don't think they'll be able to recreate such a scenario in America. Let's hope I'm right on that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, as you said, it's a common tactic to create that general social unrest to kind of force societal change and, of course, push it in the political direction that you want to have achieved.
There's one other delusion I want to touch upon.
Sure.
Which is equally tragic. And that's the delusion of the conservatives. Now, who look at this and they say, oh, look at those people. Look at Al Sharpton. Look what they're doing. Look at these stupid liberals. And they're just willfully blind to the bigger picture. I mean, if all you do is waste your time and energy pointing a finger at a two-bit punk like Al Sharpton, you achieve nothing. And I was actually on a radio show just yesterday making this point to the conservative radio talk show host. And I said, this is bigger than Sharpton. It's bigger than Obama. There it is, the Marxist media moguls. I didn't get into the whole Jewish thing. But as soon as I said that, He said, oh, no, it's just the media just likes being sensationalist, and it's stupid liberals and radicals, and that's that. And he shut me down.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as the people who oppose this take that attitude, we may as well just lay down, just wave the white flag. If you can't name the enemy, if you can't name the true perpetrators, then, you know, you can piss and moan all you want. It's useless. So both ends of the American idiocracy are totally deluded. You have the liberals who think that this is a good thing, and then you have the conservatives who think that, you know, Al Sharpton is the problem.
Well, exactly. I mean, they know nothing about, you know, the neocons or Zionism. And in some cases, if you bring it up, they go raving mad, of course. But you know, they support the activities of the military, you know, whatever they do, it doesn't matter. They know nothing about AIPAC, you know, because this is the mode that they fall into, right? And if you, you know, if you bring up 9/11 or something, then you're a kooky conspiracy theorist. And it's so boxed in. It's just unbelievable to me, you know?
Well, that is the that's the whole essence of controlled opposition. So both sides are locked in.
Well, that's what we're trying to do here, of course, bridging outside of that. Just seeing the insanity of what's going on, obviously on all spectrums of you know, the political circus that we have out there, you know, and despite that, having said a lot of that, I think that there's a huge push right now by the cultural Marxists who've laid the groundwork for many, many, many years to change society into what they see. I mean, I see the entire West as being the enforcement arm of not only political correctness, but that type of cultural Marxism that, you know, for example, doesn't exist in Russia, it seems like, anymore. And this dynamic has changed. I think that's just very interesting. But now it's we who are, like, you know, policing the world to bring this wonderful liberalism to the rest of the world and enforcing it by bombs if we have to, you know. So it's this is insanity, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you touched upon another one of the reasons why Russia has been targeted and why Putin is so demonized. You know, they're not having this in Russia. They're not going to allow it.
Yeah. We'll see what comes out of that and how they're, you know, seeking to expand that war on them, of course. We can see if we can talk more about that a little bit later. But let's. Is there anything more you wanted to say about Al Sharpton, by the way? I know you had a recent story up about him and his body count, as you call it, and his how he's, you know, part of the problem.
That was my most recent piece. You can see that at tomatobubble.com at the updates section. And, you know, I generally don't like to spend a whole lot of time with two-bit punks like Sharpton. You know, you'll notice most of the items at Tomato Bubble, you know, deal with the bigger picture, the philosophical stuff. But sometimes I'll go play in the gutter just to hopefully hook some of these simple-minded conservatives into my website and get them, you know, to think a little deeper. But yeah, the piece I did on Al Sharpton is a review of his illustrious career and the known deaths that he is directly responsible for. I think it's 9 people dead by my count, 7 in one incident and 1 on 2 other incidents. 3 incidents, 9 dead, all of which resulted immediately after Sharpton incited a mob.
Yeah.
And to me, there's a very, very fine line between deliberate incitement and actually killing an individual. And he straddles that fence. So that's what I summarize in that piece. These 3 incidents in which Sharpton's incitement led, I mean, that same day or the day after, led someone in the mob to commit murder.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And of course, the way he's accused, you know, different, you know, people like the Tawana Brawley case and all that stuff. And Stephen Pagonis was dragged into these things. And that seems to be their game kind of thing, you know, and focus on these sob stories, which are false, you know?
Yeah. And again, for, you know, people in your audience who are maybe younger or newer to this stuff, we go back to 30 years ago, back in the 80s, during that time when I was in college, Al Sharpton was a national laughingstock. even among most black folk. And yet, here he is again, mainstream. He's one of Obama's right-hand men. He has his own TV show. So, and this would have been, if you would have said to someone 30 years ago, you see that guy Sharpton, 30 years from now, he's going to be walking in and out of the White House, and he's going to have his own TV show. You would have been laughed at. The same with the acceptance of transgenderism or this La Raza business. All of this 30 years ago was just considered a caricature of the left, and now it's normal. And we can only imagine what the next 20 years will bring. Bestiality, pedophilia, will that all be normalized? I'm betting that it will.
Yeah, there's two sides to that, and I think I think we're going to see a retaliation against that and an uprising against that. But just speaking about that quickly, I don't know if you caught the story, but one of the gay rights activists, Terry Bean, who was part of the 2012 Obama campaign, I think it raised about $500,000. He's recently been dragged into, you know, one of these cases, which is basically pedophilia. It was like having sex with a 15-year-old boy, and you know, it's right there on the cusp. And he's very well in. I mean, he's even like, you know, dancing with like Nancy Pelosi on you know, Barney Frank's wedding and stuff like this. You know, he's visiting Air Force One, and this is the type of people that they're surrounding themselves with. You know,
well, I know a wise woman once said, "Show me the books a man reads, and a company he keeps, and I will show you the man." So that doesn't say much for Mr. Obongo, does it?
No, it doesn't. And he reads, what does he read? Rules for Radicals and stuff
like
that?
Rules for Radicals. There was Fareed Zakaria's book. What was it? The End of the American Set, something like that.
I can't believe that. I mean, let's think about that for a moment. I looked at some of the movies there, but I mean, even like they're full on just literally card carrying communists that are like, you know, mentors for Obama. And I mean, it's unbelievable that they managed to pull this off on America that used to have, you know, McCarthy and all this. Right. And they've been known for being such, you know, racists and bigots and so foreign to all these things. But here we are. How was that battle lost, do you think? I mean, because it's obvious that people didn't pay attention, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, you actually gave a clue to your own answer to that question when you mentioned McCarthy,
mm-hmm.
because you know American school children don't learn much about anything. You know, they might get a good specialized education if they want to in a certain field like engineering or science. But as far as a broad based classic Western philosophical education, they don't get any of that. But what they do learn in history is you will learn two things. And I don't care if you flunk out of the eighth grade or if you're borderline IQ of a moron. Every American student will come out of school knowing, one, that Martin Luther King was the greatest man who ever lived, and two, that Joe McCarthy was the devil.
Right, yeah.
Oh, and Hitler, that's three.
Yeah.
They're both devils. So McCarthyism is taught in every American social studies or history class. And he is really hammered. And it's strange. Is probably the only senator that every American can name. He is the most reviled American in history. Okay? And what did he do? Well, he was the one who was exposing the communists.
Yeah.
So what happens now is there's a Pavlovian psychological reaction to the notion of anti-communism or communist subversives. The moment you start to point out, you know, somebody had these connections and Saul Alinsky and so forth, you know, right away that whole, oh no, that's McCarthyism kicks in and the mind shuts down. So you almost have to admire these demons for their brilliance by making Joe McCarthy or the false narrative of McCarthyism such a big part of the history curriculum in our schools. They've insulated themselves from a future McCarthy ever arising again. So that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Talking about communist subversion is almost as bad as talking about the Jews.
It's amazing to me how we've gone to this corner, if you will, of it, where it's all about, you know, whoever has been suppressed immediately, you know, stands as the victor in from the historical perspective today, you know, and it's very much about this kind of victim class, and there's no one that's kind of just, I guess, just toughening up to this and saying, listen, you know, it's like this and that might have happened, whatever is this the case. The reality of the situation is that it can't change what is occurring right now and how it's affecting people that are alive today, even in that regard. However they view that, if that was right or wrong, it doesn't, in the long perspective there, it's like something has to be done about this aspect of overcoming and looking at the situation. What is happening right now? Is this sound? What direction are we going? I mean, we definitely need some tough love to bring brought into the situation, yeah, and toughen up and just say, you know what? Tough luck. There's a lot of people suffering in the world, a lot of things that are, people are hurt and they're offended by this and that and the other. But if the world is going to spend all its time and resources in nitpicking people's, you know, Twitter feeds, or, you know, down to the most microscopic level of what they've said, what they think, whatever, this world is doomed as we know it. That's how I see it.
Well, yeah, because, you know, obviously, if you are not permitted to identify a problem, there's no way of solving it. Now, on paper, we have, you know, the First Amendment here in America, which protects free speech. But in essence, we don't have it because, you know, just the level of ostracism that one will open himself up to if he does speak the truth, it's such that, I mean, no senator or no academic or no journalist will be able to speak up. Even if he did have the courage, it would be a suicide mission. He'll lose his job or his position anyway. So we do not have freedom of speech in essence. And that's the problem.
Yeah, that is the problem. We're going to take a break in a little bit here, but let me just wing one thing by you here. And it seems like that freedom of speech is, in some cases, directed just one way as well. Because, I mean, you remember the story of Emma West, right, in London, on the tram there?
Refresh my memory.
Okay, you know, she was the one who went on a diatribe. What do you call it? She was just, you know, she
She
freaked out all of a sudden, just like started to talk, you know, ill about all the immigrants. And she wondered basically, where am I anymore? I'm not even in England anymore. You know, she got this, you know, thing going there. And then she was basically, you know, hunted down, tracked down and dragged in court and all these kinds of things, right? So, you know, that's clear that, you know, you're not allowed to voice your opinions. Granted, that's in Europe, not America. So I understand that there's a distinction there. But nonetheless, having said that, there's a rapper in America here just yesterday, I think it was, Azealia Banks, I guess her name is. And she's talking about on her Twitter feed, she might have to kill one of these crackers in their sleep. She's talking about, I know it's so fucked up, but these things just make me feel such a general hatred for all straight white men. It's a burning anger. She goes on in a couple of these posts here, you know, I can't help hating all these people, etc. You know, but so it seems, you know, and I doubt she'll be tracked down the way that Emma West was, right? So there's a immense double standard here, and that's what we have to continue to push on, that it flows in one direction and it's only in that direction. And this is what drives me crazy about it, you know?
Yeah. But then again, until the string pullers are identified, you know, it's almost pointless to point out these individual cases.
Well, sure. I know that. It's just one example. But it's just to show the double standards of it, you know?
Oh, it's just horrible, the double standard. Some of the things that people say on the left, open advocacy of killing people, it's come to.
Yeah.
They can say those things. And yet just the most off-the-cuff remark, you know, the other way, you know, here they don't arrest people like in Europe, but you will lose your job.
Yeah, exactly. There's repercussions from that there. But all right, let's take a short break here in a little bit, and we'll pick up Mike in a bit. But definitely tell us a bit more about your website, Tomato Bubble. Let us know about some of the things you have on the website. You have books available. You have a lot of articles, of course. But yeah, give us the skinny on that.
Okay, well, tomatobubble.com, and I have to humbly say, I don't think there's any other website of its kind out there. Not so much because of the information that it provides, but the niche, the special niche, which I specialize in, is to take something that is, you know, seemingly complex or vast and not understandable, and to break it down into very easily digestible bites. Lots of pictures, brief blurbs, to the point. A lot of good stuff on history, especially World War II. So your reader should check out The Bad War. That's right on the left-hand side. Most of the content is free, 90%. If somebody wants to buy the paperback books or the PDFs, they have that option. And certainly, at the very least, people ought to sign up for the free newsletter, free reports, updates that I send out generally 3 to 4 days per week. But that's it in a nutshell. I deal with history, economics, philosophy, and current events. And, you know, this can really take somebody who doesn't know what's going on at all, but is curious and open-minded, and kind of get you a PhD in what I call conspiratorial studies, in literally a matter of hours. So, you know, have a look, tomatobubble.com.
All right, very good. And there are conspiracies, folks, whether you believe that or not. It's just the reality of the situation. All right, the website, tomatobubble.com. And I do like those pieces on World War II as well, Mike, because they do bring a very different story to the table. And I'm actually going to ask you a little bit more about that in the second here as we pick up and continue, specifically the Hitler in Argentina hoax. He wrote a good piece on that, and we're definitely going to talk more about that. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Oh, Lord, won't you bless this night from the very lips of a youth.
in the next hour as we continue at redicemembers.com. We go over Mike King's article called The Hitler in Argentina Hoax, as he has looked closer at the evidence presented for the case that Hitler escaped the bunker in Berlin and got away to South America. There is an entire industry that has popped up around World War II, Nazis, and Hitler, as you very well know. But we'll take a closer look at some of this material and ask if there's something to it or if it's just another distraction for a Hitler-obsessed market. Well, you can join us at redicemembers.com. Go there to sign up and tune in if you haven't already and get to our archives of over 900 programs on a lot of different topics. We also have videos, films, and much more. We have upcoming on the program Kerry Bolton, Christopher Vassy, Marianne Van Court, Robert Ferguson, Jeff Gates, and many more. Please stay with us and we'll be right back after the break. Thank you for listening.